Hello everyone, I'm Sasha from Charity Digital and I want to say a big hello and thank you for giving us a listen today. We're going to be talking about the burnout that's being felt across the UK charity sector at the moment. Many of us are feeling pretty fed up with the persistence of COVID-19. If you start your day off like me, where I read the news, which let's face it, is a really bad habit to have, you might wonder when this whole COVID saga will ever end. We're frustrated by the promise of a so-called new normal that never seems to arrive. We're struggling to find enthusiasm amid the ever-growing list of compliance and logistic demands, all of which are stemming from constant change. Simply put, we're tired, and the whole sector is feeling it. In this podcast, the team at Charity Digital will be addressing the burnout that's happening across the country and why the charity sector is being so badly hit in particular. We'll be looking at how charities can counter burnout by supporting staff and volunteers, ensure a healthy work-life balance, tackle post-lockdown anxiety, and much more. Joining us today is Stuart Barber, Client Account Specialist, Lisa Schmidt, Business Development Manager, and Mimi Morrill, Event Manager. Hello everyone, how are we feeling today? I bet we're all really pleased to be squeezing in yet another Zoom meeting for this important topic. So I just want to start off by asking you all, what do you think accounts for charity sector burnout? And actually, Lisa, if you'd be happy to sort of kick us off with that one.
Yes, well, that's a great question. I think there are several aspects. Generally, is like you said in your intro, there's a lot of different demands about compliance. I'm gonna, you know, maybe go off a tangent, bringing a volunteer perspective there. Volunteers have given a lot of their times over the past year and a half, juggling with, you know, the service users' struggle and anxiety, dealing with their own anxiety, and dealing with the ever-changing, you know, compliance, mask, no mask, you know, lockdown, no lockdown. So there's been a lot of different changes. And when it comes to charity employees and charity professionals, on top of all of that, you know, reduced income and increasing demand. I think there's also been a lot of pressure due to remote working as well. I mean, we are all working remotely, so I'm pretty sure Stuart and Mimi can also bring some ideas to that.
Yeah, thanks, Lisa. Hi, everyone. I think a lot of this comes down to us as people working in the charity sector. There is kind of something that links us all together. We believe in what we do. We want to go that extra mile for our service users. And that during the pandemic has been something that has been the forefront of everybody's mind. The people that were at the most risk needed the most help. And that meant increased hours, increased dedication, because the charity sector cares, if you like. It cares about the people. And as working in that sector, I'm here to do my best for the rest of you, to help you make those steps, to be able to deliver your services online, to make that switch around. At the beginning of the pandemic, when everyone was making the switch, workload for me and my team increased 3-4 times what we would expect it to be. Speaking to lots of, I don't particularly want to say panicked people, but people that weren't sure how to make that switch, how to look after their service users, to give their all when nobody really knew what was going on, what was going to happen, what's the long-term effects. Can they see their service users face to face? What about those physical services? And it has cost time, money, energy, and will to make those changes. And I think as we haven't had a break from that yet, sort of 16, 17 months down the road, that, here we are still plugging away and helping with no complete end in sight.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think you're so right with what you say, Stuart, that we do love to go the extra mile, and I think it's not knowing when to stop is such a big part of everything. One thing that I found definitely during this whole process, and I don't know if either of you will agree, I've never known so much about myself. Like, I spend quite a lot of time in Zoom meetings, which obviously you don't want to look at yourself during those meetings, but you automatically do. So then you figure out, you find out so much about how you react to things, how kind of you're giving, you know, really no longer think that you've got that poker face that you always thought that you had in those meetings, because you can see how you're reacting. We're not kind of programmed to see that side of us. That's not, we don't walk around the street with a mirror in front of us all the time. True. But that's exactly what's happening now. And on calls, people can look at five people at once. You can constantly, you're on show. And I feel like that's part of the kind of where you're almost acting a role and you're having to show like a game face throughout these meetings. And if you're having 3 or 4 hours of meetings every day, that just gets really exhausting for someone. And I think that's something that we really do need to take into consideration, and not only Zoom fatigue by having that many meetings, but also video fatigue from constantly having that turned on and constantly looking like you're in the zone. Because when you're in a meeting, you're not constantly involved in the conversation. There will be part of that conversation that you have to be kind of prepared for and report back on, but it's not the whole meeting. And I think that's something that I've really found recently in myself, that I'm just kind of getting a bit worn out of in a way. Another thing, like you were saying, Stuart, with kind of so many calls and people not panicking, but almost kind of wanting the answer right away. I've noticed that during our events quite a lot, where normally if you're lost for a physical event, you'll just ask someone on the street for directions and you'll be like, am I walking the right way? Is it this way? With a virtual event, you can't physically do that. So you're instinct is straight away, I need help, I need to go to the customer service, or I need to go to the events manager, I need help now, and I need to find out where I'm going. And that's completely down to us not providing the clear directions. But at the same time, it's that instant panic of I need the answer now. And it does make it a little bit harder. So when you're planning those events, not only are you in 10 places at once because it's virtual and you physically can be in 10 places at once, whereas in reality, you can't be in 10 different rooms. You're also making sure that you're looking after those attendees before the events even started and making sure you're kind of following them through on that journey. And it is challenging. Mm-hmm. You have to bring in so many other people, which, yeah, it does play with your brain quite a lot.
That's an excellent point, Mimi. You say about bringing in other people, but we've all been working from home. So what we don't have is that backup of being sat in the office together and everyone around you knowing what's going on. It's like you would have seen it when I've been on a particularly bad call with a customer. I tend to stand up.
Yeah.
So everybody in the office, I may not get louder or anything like that, but everybody in the office knows immediately that that's a tense situation that I'm dealing with.
Yeah.
And so when you're off that, you get the backup from your peers and debrief, your colleagues. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You get to debrief, unload, and de-stress from that situation. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that is missing.
Mm-hmm. You're also less likely to get sent a Teams message straight away because people are like, oh, I'll give them some time. They need to debrief. But again, you're working from home. No one knows what your capacity is like.
Exactly.
They can't see you.
And that Teams message with the answer, when another member of the team knows what the answer to the question is, because through a customer service team, that happens when we're together all day.
Yeah.
And a part that we've had to find new ways of doing that.
It is so interesting. I do think one of the good things, and we'll probably get to kind of good things to bring into your organizations, but one of the good things that we brought in quite early on was the Teams help chat. Because what I found quite early on was normally you'd just stand up in the office and be like, guys, does anyone have the answer to this? And you wouldn't have to do, and this is horrible for me to say, but you wouldn't have to do all the niceties of, hey, how's your day going? How are you feeling?
Yes.
All of that on a huge chat when you just want the answer. Like, of course I care about you. Of course I want to know that you're okay. But also I need the answer to this question really fast. So we brought in that help chat, and it has been really helpful for me because I know I can just chuck a question in there. And like you say, Stuart, it's not only one person that knows the answer to that question. A lot of people do. So to have everyone in there is really, really helpful.
Yeah,
these are all such great points. And actually, that does lead me quite nicely to how can charities work to maintain employee enthusiasm? Because, I mean, I know that Bumble and LinkedIn, they let their staff kind of have a week off. But I'm sure a lot of charities can agree that that would be really difficult to implement within our own organisations, to let everybody just have kind of a week off, or however they did it. So, yeah, I'm just wondering, again, Lisa, I'll pass over to you, but how do you think, alongside some of the things we've already just mentioned, how charities can sort of put things in place to maintain that employee enthusiasm?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, very simple. Carry on talking, keep on talking, keeping the channel of communications open, whether that's WhatsApp, whether that's Teams, anything, so long as people feel they can be heard and they can be, you know, listen, and they can give, you know, their thoughts, share their feedback about, okay, this is not going well, or I have capacity, I do not have capacity. I mean, keeping all that clarity as well of, you know, I'm expected to do my job, obviously, or as a volunteer, I'm expected to do that. But also, you know, I've got boundaries, you know, I have to, you know, to pick up the kids, or I have to do this after work. So really, you know, remain very open and transparent about, you know, about how you work and how you expect, you know, people to work, and how, you know, you should react when people say the same thing to you. And I think it's also quite interesting from a manager employee perspective. It's also important for managers to understand, really, and ask the questions. Do you have, you know, are you okay? Do you have enough capacity? What can I do to help? So yeah, keep talking.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I think also, I think what I found, and I've noticed this kind of working quite closely with Chris, our head of marketing, is that it's a lot of responsibility that's kind of fallen onto managers during this whole work from home situation, because even though they're our manager, they're also going through the exact same thing as us. And you do kind of look to them to kind of have all the answers, when actually that they're just normal human beings at the same time. And they've never had to work in conditions like this either. And I think Lisa's so right. Communication is so important. Unless you actually voice to someone, and it doesn't have to be your manager, it can be just someone within the team, and then that gets fed back to your manager through that person, but you don't feel comfortable having that direct conversation. It just allows them people to understand the situation. Because again, the way I think about it is, if you walk into the office and you've had a bad morning at home, you're able to separate that whole work life, because you leave it at your front door and you come into your office door and you're like, okay, now I'm in office work brain. You can't do that anymore, because I'm sat in my lounge in my flat with my four other flatmates. It's an intense working day, and I don't have children, so I can't imagine what it would be like to have children as well. So you can't really leave that home situation at the door, but you do need to talk about it. And whether that's literally just saying, I've had a bad morning, just so you're aware, and kind of, ages ago we spoke about bringing this in, but we never actually implemented it. But I wonder if it would be good for times like this, where it's the traffic light system, and you kind of have that whole green, amber and red traffic light system on your Teams or on something like that, where you kind of say, I've had a tough morning, I've got a really busy day, just so you're aware, this is where I'm at. And you've got your little red token on your Teams, so that people know, and if they have something urgent for them, they know that that might not necessarily translate to being just as urgent for you, because your capacity is high at the moment. So it's being aware of other people's work at the same time, and how you approach people, I think is really, really important at the moment.
So I completely agree with both of you, but I'm going to go on a slightly different track to this. As somebody that has mental health issues, I am fully aware of how I tend to get towards sort of a burnout stage where I am not coping very well. And this kind of feeds back in that open channel of communication. We're very lucky here. We have multiple different people that we can go to and speak to, from peers to management. Through the whole pandemic, management have been great at reminding us that we need to take time for ourselves. We need to take time off. And there's some level of personal responsibility there. I know sometimes it can take a lot to say, hang on a little bit, hang on a minute, I'm struggling, I need a bit. But if we don't step up and we don't say that, people don't know. And the pressure's there, and you think, oh, well, that person can manage that. Let's just add a little more task on there. They're not going to mind, because we say yes. Mm-hmm. And actually, sometimes that we have to have that separation of being able to say, hang on a minute, I'm at capacity, I can't do that right now, or is there somebody else available to do that? And a lot of that is switching off, keeping regular office hours, as it were. We're sat at home. How easy is it to check your emails on your phone first thing in the morning? I personally don't do that. I don't mind if I receive them. I think that's a slightly different issue. It's that expectation of responding to out of hours. I keep my lunch breaks sacred. So if I don't get my lunch break, I know that's something that I'm then going to have a bad afternoon.
Yeah, I think it's such a good point. I've started booking in my diary, because my diary gets quite booked up, and I've started booking in like hours, 45 minutes, and I was going on runs, and it was really helpful, because that was the beauty of working from home, was that I could have a half an hour run and a quick shower and come back, and it was like my day just continued.
Mm-hmm. Whereas, clear your head.
Yeah, exactly. I've cleared my head to start the day again, which is really nice. And I do really recommend doing that. And I think if you book it in your diary, it's just like a meeting. You have to attend it. Mm-hmm. Almost you have to step away from your desk and give yourself that, because you deserve that. Like, you've had a tough day and you've got to follow through with that. I do think you mentioned this slightly, Stuart, with the kind of receiving emails and stuff like that. Everyone works differently. Some people are better in the morning, some people are better in the afternoon. I'm definitely more of an afternoon person. I do sometimes tend to work a little bit later than I should, and I need to stop doing that, but my brain functions a lot better later in the day. So if I do message people later in the day, I'll make sure I kind of caveat that with kind of, this is a message for tomorrow. This is not to be action today. Like, have a nice evening, stuff like that. However, that's only to people that I know, like with Zoe or with Chris, who I know, they know that this is how I work, and they're happy to receive that message. If they weren't happy to receive that, if they were kind of more of an early bird, then I would make sure that I wouldn't do that. Because I feel like you do have to kind of think about who is receiving that email. And I've seen quite a lot of emails recently, actually, where people have added it in their subject line. If they kind of have children and their working hours are a little bit all over the place, like everyone's are at the moment, they do pop that in that subject line and kind of say, I do not expect you to respond back to me. Mm-hmm. And I do think it is such a good thing.
Yeah,
see, I'm the complete opposite to you, as we know. I'm the early bird. And yeah, I'm just as guilty with the emails and the messages, but I do those as a, I've come across this while I'm working. I don't expect you to look at that until you're working, not an immediate response. And I think as long as people understand that slightly more, it has caused some friction in our team at times. But that was a lack of understanding on different work styles and different work patterns.
And talking it through as well.
Yeah, that's like what you were saying earlier, Lisa. You have to have those conversations. And I think it's almost worth, I know, another meeting, no one wants them, but it's almost worth having a quick 15-minute sink and being like, right, let's lay our cards on the table. How do people want to approach this? Now things are starting to settle down a little bit, we want to say. Maybe now is the time to kind of reevaluate what the kind of instant reaction was and see where you want to go for the rest of the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And also would add, you know, build to that also from a volunteer perspective. So somebody who obviously give their time and because obviously there's no money, nothing, that they might be maybe afraid to say no, because, well, yes, they joined the charity to give up their time, their skills, or etc. So they're like, okay, I'm giving all of that. I shouldn't be, you know, I should be selfless, really. And it's okay to say, well, you know, I'm at capacity, or I can't do it, or I need help with that. There might be sometimes a little bit of fear of actually saying no. And I think from a charity leader perspective, is also quite important to create that safe space for your volunteers. Maybe some people who have joined recently and some people who are new to volunteering who do not know the code or do not feel comfortable with talking. It's important to create that space for them, whether that's, you know, WhatsApp or in person, to be like, okay, if you have anything or if you're struggling, you know, just let us know, because the last thing you want is having even your volunteer burning out and leaving your charity when they are struggling at, you know, when you are struggling, when you're looking for resources and manpower. So it's also quite interesting to possibly extend that to your volunteers and keep it very simple so that people know what to do.
Yeah, definitely. Because I think, you know, for volunteers, it must be so strange as well. You're going into these charities with a really strong passion there to help other people. And I always think about the sort of creatives who are usually there one-to-one, working in person, in groups. They have that really great communication, and then suddenly having to do it all over Zoom or something. And then, you know, that's kind of going back to that Zoom burnout itself, because a lot of these volunteers might have their day-to-day jobs like this, you know, working all online remotely. And then the one thing that, you know, they're super passionate about, the thing that they kind of want to give back to the community, mm-hmm. might also have to be online as well. So I think you're right. There needs to be that sort of support in place. I think it's also interesting what you were saying, Mimi and Stuart, about kind of having different working patterns and being respectful there about what those are. I mean, actually, kind of France adopted legislation where making after work emails became illegal, essentially. But what we're saying here is that, well, does it have to be? Because the reality is that we've all realized we don't actually all sync up and work really effectively between the hours of 9 to 5:30. Mm-hmm. Actually, there's different patterns going on there. Mm-hmm. So I think it's more than just kind of making certain things illegal or whatever, but it's actually about maintaining that communication. So, I mean, that kind of leads me to I know we've sort of suggested some ideas of what charities can do at the moment, but obviously, the future is really uncertain, and we don't know what it's going to hold. So I'm wondering if you have any ideas of how can charities sort of think in the long term here as well. I mean, when we do potentially go back to offices, or if we do that, you know, 2 days a week, how can we ensure that a lot of the work that we've been putting into our organisations to make sure that our employees are kind of happy, or, you know, that we're talking to them a lot regularly about and checking in with them. How do we sort of make sure that we do this in the long term as well?
Yeah, well, I can maybe start off. It might be maybe a little bit too simple, but if you have a couple of things that have worked well over the past 18 months, keep them. I forgot the expression now, but if it's not, don't try and fix it. If it's not broken, fix it. Something like, even if it's just, we have WhatsApp, we have Teams, and it's working well. Well, yeah, keep it. It's not because you're all back in the office that, you know, you have to put it aside. Keep it. If it's working well, just carry on doing that. If your employees have and your volunteers have embraced it and have taken ownership of it, yeah. There's definitely, even if it's just one thing that people are very enthusiastic about, you know, if you can double down on it, or if you can make sure that it is the central piece, then do it. And it can be very simple.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I think one thing I found, I have weekly one-to-ones with Chris, and I have them with Zoe as well. And I've seen that they've changed so much, especially my ones with Chris. It's about an hour long, but I'll spend about half an hour, 45 minutes just having a check-in. And I think that has really allowed me to kind of, and I am this type of person, so again, it depends what kind of person you are and if you feel comfortable talking about it, but it essentially allows me to word vomit to him on Teams, on Zoom, and I have that conversation where I kind of just let everything go, and vice versa as well. So you can have that conversation where you create that safe space. I think we've also, as a team, we have our daily coffee catch-ups, which we've spoken about quite a lot. They've been really helpful. We also, as an organization, have one on a Friday, which is really nice. It's a lunchtime one. It's optional. And I think that's a big thing as well, because I think if you feel like you're at capacity and the last thing you want to do right now is sit on a call and listen to people just not chatting about work when all you can think about is work, then obviously that's not a good thing to attend, because you just want to get on with everything. However, I am that type of person. And then when I attend these coffee catch-ups and then come away from them, I feel like a completely different person, because I feel so much more relaxed, because actually it is so helpful to have that half an hour of just talking about absolute rubbish, of like, what's the latest movie you've watched, especially the football at the moment, everything like that. And it does really help, but it's not until you've gone into it and you've allowed yourself into that meeting that then you realize, oh God, that was really worth it. I'm glad I attended that.
My thoughts on this are more of a hope that actually that what we've learned over the last year and a bit actually kind of sticks with that level of flexibility. I for one, I didn't enjoy working from home for the first 6 months. Yeah. Now I'm kind of at the stage where I don't want to go back to the office. And I'm hoping once we are doing a sort of flexible hybrid thing, that those days where I'm back in the office, it is going to be work where I'm going to need to be collaborating directly with my colleagues and things like that. For my own work pattern, I don't see a reason, if I'm on a day where I am just head down doing admin, why I would necessarily need to have the distraction maybe of another 12, 13 people around me. I'd like to think that this has given all organizations the opportunity to think again about work-life balance and things like that. I love not having to get on the tube.
Yes, I think everyone loves that.
it's panic inducing and everything else that goes along with that busy commute, and if I don't have to do that again, I'm not gonna. But
that's such a good point.
But I do miss that in-office interaction and that collaboration
atmosphere.
I think that's so important, because sometimes I'll be sat at my desk, and my poor flatmates, they honestly know so much about my job now that I don't think they wanted to know this much, but I've had to bounce ideas off them, because in my role, you do have to be a little bit more creative. You do want that kind of back and forth conversation that you don't get on Zoom or Teams. And even the other day, we were in the office for like 20 minutes and we had a small chat and solved so many problems that I've been thinking about for so long. And I was like, this is the difference. So like you say, having at least that one day to be in the office, to almost have a big like kind of discussion, it allows you to overcome any of those little things that you've been you've been thinking about on your own, and you don't want to waste anyone else's time because everyone's so busy, but actually you're just spending longer on a project because you're not voicing it
Installing,
out.
Installing,
yeah. Yeah. It is so interesting.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you so much for that, guys. There's so much to think about, really. And it seems like a lot of charities have worked to try and help address the burnout that's happening at the moment. But, you know, it's not something that should just sort of be sort of dealt with as it happens, but things need to be put in place, and hopefully that will be something we address a lot more in the future, whether we sort of go back to the offices full time or only for a few days. So yeah, thank you guys. If there's anything else you want to say, please do say. But otherwise, I think this was a really interesting discussion.
I know, yeah. I feel like almost wanting to do a part two to that, because we could talk on this for ages. But really, like, you know, keep things simple and keep talking internally and with volunteers and essentially, if from a charity leader's perspective, if they can maybe think of how they can put employee volunteer well-being more into the strategy long term, and think of easy ways to do that, I think that would be a great step in the right direction already, so that, you know, if, you know, touch wood, it doesn't happen again, but if we have to have another pandemic or another big issue with lockdown, at least we're better armed and now have better tools to go through it.
My last thing would be that this is quite a hard thing to recognize in yourself. As someone who has gone through it, I feel like I can now, but it takes a while for you to be able to. If you start noticing it in someone else in your team, don't be afraid to talk to them, because I think you do sometimes, and that might put their back up, they might be a bit defensive, but you do sometimes need to approach someone and be like, I'm a little bit worried about you. You have been working quite late. And also don't think that that's the manager's responsibility. Like, of course, if you feel like that is, go to your manager and explain it to them. But also as teams,
yeah,
you've been working together so long, exactly, like talk to each other, like, you know each other better than anyone else. You spend most of your time with each other. So definitely chat with each other about it.
My final thought would be just that everyone look after themselves. Remember, at times it is okay to say, no, sorry, I can't do that. Remember to take time away from your job. Waiting for everything to get better isn't necessarily the thing that will be best for you in the long run. And all I've got to do is reiterate what everyone else has said. Keep those channels of communications open. Talk about it. The more honest you are with yourself, your colleagues, and your management, you will reap the rewards of that, because everyone will know what the situation is.
Amazing. Thank you so much, everyone. If you are interested about the topic of burnout or how to support your employees, we do have so many articles on this, and we do have some other sort of podcast episodes related to this as well. Also, feel free to subscribe so that you can sort of know when our future podcast will be coming out. But again, thank you so much to our wonderful speakers.
Thank you.
And yeah, we'll see you next time.
See you.
Bye.
Bye.